this couple had gone to bed, and it was early in the evening, in the night, but they fell into a very deep sleep. And the phone started to ring, and the wife heard a disturbance. She didn't know what it was, and slowly, she comes to consciousness, and she realizes finally that it's the telephone. So she reaches over, picks up the telephone, but is still so sleepy that she doesn't say anything. And so she's holding the phone, and pretty soon she hears the other person hang up. But she hears somebody in the room saying, "Hello, hello." So she looks over, and her husband had grabbed the family cat and was shouting, "Hello, hello," into its nose. And then when he let the cat go, it shot out of the room, and it never returned to sleep in that area again. Ever since then, isn't that fun?
That was one of the best programs, I thought.
Do you remember that?
Heavy theory.
Oh.
So he had a week before that, and so he did a real good job.
Hello, hello. I know, I was driving the car to the director's meetings, and I started to laugh, and my eyes got all teared up, and I couldn't see, where I was driving very well. Okay. I think we're going to get started because there's so much confusion on the workshops. I don't know if any more are coming than this, and if they are, they're probably talking to their friends. But I feel that today we have an unprecedented opportunity as women to share the gospel. For the last 10 years, I think it was about 1978, I got into the feminist interests, and the feminists had the floor at that time. Now most of the married women are in the marketplace. We have latchkey children or no children and aspiring divorce and all this. And all of the things that the feminists promised women simply have not come through. And women have positions today. They have everything that supposedly they were promised, but the vacuum, the emptiness is still there. And I feel that today, with the gospel, with conviction, and by modeling, we women have opportunities that we perhaps have not had for many years. And I think the Christian testimony is fairly dead in the marketplace, especially. The reason this was initially said as a marketplace is that's where I did piloting myself. But this is a Bible study for women, high school, I would say, on up. And this is a Bible study, the one that you have in your hands, that is, those are the galleys. It'll be printed. It will be out in January. And the only part I've given you is the Bible study portion. I want to say a few more things for introduction first. I think in the Navigators, we have had primarily a male approach to presenting the gospel. We have dealt with facts. When we get that bridge illustration down on a napkin, we have presented the gospel. Whether the person appreciated it or not or understood it is immaterial. But we feel we have presented the gospel. A factual approach is a male approach. A fact, using facts is a male approach. There's nothing wrong with facts. We need them. But years ago, when I started what drove me to the Bible to research what does Jesus think of women, it was because around the Navigators, I felt women had a second-rate mentality. And so I said, "Lord, what do you think of women?" And so this was a 20-year-old message, essentially, that I've used evangelistically or any other way. And then the women's committee, the WAC committee, asked if I would write a book about it. Well, I have said, and I've got a quote here, I will never write a book. But then the thought occurred to me, if we could make this an evangelistic book, I would be motivated. Because I have seen women come to Christ through it, speaking it. But how to get your words down on paper in a way that you would understand it, picking it up cold, is another story. And, of course, I've had NavPress realized what they had in an author. And so they assigned Paula Reinhart to me. So I have an author help, an editor helping me in Seattle and one helping me here, and we finally got it done. What we've done in piloting it up in the Seattle area has been very exciting. Women that have never led anyone to Christ have been piloting it. And we've seen a number. And one of the things we're going to do in the Seattle seminar is have maybe a popcorn or some way to have women that have led someone to Christ or used this study get up and quickly tell what happened. We took a survey of over 250 women in about 6 or 8 churches, and the percentages are in the book. If I could find them quickly, I'd read them to you, but they're in here. I have the whole book, and I will let you look it over if you'd like, but here they are. 45% of the women surveyed had never led a person to Christ. 52% feel inadequate to explain the gospel. 44% fear rejection or ridicule. And 79% feel guilty for not sharing their faith. These are the church women. So as I thought about this, if we could get church women who are now going to church for aerobics, for basket weaving, for Bible studies, odd. Now, I think I open that. Okay. Good. Thank you. If it gets too cold, close. I just wanted to cool the room off. Just leave it closed. That's fine. So I think if we could mobilize some of these women in churches, and in Seattle I'm in contact with a number of women in directorship ministries in the churches. They are the ones that will be leading a number of the... I'll give you an explanation of what we're going to do. I will train 30 women how to do this, similar to what we will be doing today. Then we'll have a seminar, and each one of these 30 women will take 8 to 10 women at a table, and they will take them through and teach them how to use it so that we can possibly get some momentum going in the local churches, get them out of the, out of the salt shaker and into the real world. And the assignment for the 30 will be that they have a non-Christian someone that they ask to help them, and you can do this yourselves if you'd like. Ask a non-Christian to help them do this assignment. I'd like you to critique this Bible study as we go through it. Tell me what you think of it. Give me any ideas on how I can do it better. And a non-Christian, when we've had it happen, are delighted to help you do it. And they're curious. They want to know, what does Jesus think of women? So the title of the book that will be coming out in January is Jesus Cares for Women. Okay, this is the format of the book. There'll be an overview, and right now the overview is probably about 21 pages. Then there is a leader's guide, and the leader's guide follows the study so that the leader has more information than the person coming to the study. Yes, it will be bound. The evangelistic study will be perforated, and you will tear out the Bible study, reproduce the study, no breaking of copyrights, and each person coming to the study will get just one chapter at a time. This is what we're recommending. And I want you to critique my presentation. If I can be more helpful to you than I am, let me know, because I'm going to be doing this quite a bit. So you're my guinea pigs. You're the first ones. The evangelistic study takes you through the Gospels, through the lives of 5 women that Jesus had a personal encounter. And I'm going to give you an overview of that in just a moment. Do you have any questions on this? The overview and the leader's guide are bound together. The Bible study is perforated and you tear it out. I don't know what it's going to look like, but I am praying that we will all like it.
No.
I don't know what Nav Press is going to end up doing on that. I'd like to see it on the cover of something that says evangelism, because they don't see the cover. The non-Christian never sees the cover.
No.
Right. Well, they should not even see that. They don't need to see the reader's guide at all. Okay, this is the outline of Jesus. Yes.
Can you get the Bible study separately?
No. We went through that. They were going to sell it. You know, I could tell you all the things, the process. Yes, that's true. Has more information and more success. I'm going to read you the brief overview of the study. You'll notice that the first 2 chapters of Jesus Cares About Women introduce you to Jesus as a gracious, compassionate champion of women. And the first one is the woman... of Nain, the widow of Nain, whose son, and if you want to follow, when you look at your book, you'll see a little blurb that starts before the questions, You see chapter 1? See that blurb? It gives you some background. Don't read it now, because we'll be doing chapters 3 and 5 together. And you'll understand the format. But The Widow of Nain is a compassionate story, and it brings out who Jesus is and how caring he was and all of that. And the major emphasis will be his power and compassion. Can you see what I'm doing here? Okay, chapter 2 is a suffering woman, and this is a woman with the issue of blood. And the reason I couched her in there is because it brings out some very interesting points, and that is a very impressive man had come and asked Jesus to heal his daughter, remember? And Jesus stops the procession and takes care of this woman. And when you read the blurb on the fact that she's an outcast or the issue of blood, you know, in the Jewish culture, a man can't sit, and the husband probably left her because she would be unclean all the time. And she'd be a very weak woman. And all of that comes out, and then you see Jesus the champion, you know, doing... It's not corny, but it makes the point. And the women begin to respond, and Jesus points out the fact that he is God and that Jesus responds to this woman's faith. So now, that's a very unthreatening chapters. We get into a little more threatening here. And that's the one that I'd like to do with you right now, is chapter 3. And I will lead it. What I thought I'd do, if you'd like to try it, is I'd like this group to be the non-Christians, and you women watch. And I'm going to lead you as though you were non-Christians in the Bible study, and then maybe, let's see, one of you should be a Christian, because I would want a cohort in here. Who would like to be the Christian? We're going to go through it exactly. Oh, let me finish this. I'm as disorganized as usual. Okay. So that's the third one is the adulterous woman. The fourth one is the worshipful woman. And the major emphasis is Jesus paid the penalty. So you see, you start with a sin, but you don't have to give the whole gospel the first chapter that you bring it in, which gives them time to think about it. And then you get to the next one, the worshipful woman. Why did she anoint Jesus' feet? It was for his death, the passage says. Why did he have to die? And you go into all of that. And then chapter 5 is the fulfilled woman, with a major emphasis on the resurrection, the gospel presentation, and invitation. You wrap it up. And what we have discovered is that women who are not ready to receive Christ at that point are willing to go on in Bible study, because the introduction to this has been appealing to them. And it does meet a need. I'll tell you about what happened at the end of one that we had in Bellevue. We had a conference room, so we were the only ones in it. The women brought their bag lunches. And one of them was a saleswoman for NCR, which is a, you know, very good company. And the other one was in management in a bank. And they came faithfully, and the rapport began to build up between the women. The last question, you know, you notice how the pressure builds up in your own heart when you aim into the gospel. And it began with me, and I asked a couple of Christians, do you remember making this decision? Oh, yeah, I did it, blah, blah, blah. And another Christian. And then I said, Maria, do you ever remember making this decision for Christ? And she said, no. And I said, would you like to do it now? And she said, yes. So I said, Carolyn, have you ever made this decision? She said, no. I said, would you like to make it now? She said, yes. And so we all prayed together, and the two women became Christians, and the women to follow them up were right there. The women who had been witnessing to them and winning their friendship on the job. And see, the thought of all this is if we can do it a cooperative effort so that the one little Christian isn't in there all by themselves. Okay, any questions so far? I have one other overhead. I don't know what's on it. Just let me see what I had in here. Oh, yeah, the responsibility of the leader. This isn't so much for you. You know enough to do this. But when I'm teaching other women, pray, prepare, practice, and project peace. The thing you want the people to realize is you are not uptight. And when you have other Christians in there, they're praying like crazy. And there's something so supportive about it. And you're in it together. You've been in the battle together. Because of working on this study the last couple of years, there has been more of an emphasis in Seattle among the women I'm involved with, married and single, on evangelism, and women are coming to Christ. We're praying about it. We're telling more stories. It's gotten me very excited. And I asked the Lord, I said, what do you want me to give my life to? And I think pretty much he showed me what he wants me to give my life to for this duration. Okay, why don't I grab that chair? Did I? I knocked it all off. Get it hooked up soon. Now, you can do this in the neighborhood. You can do this one-on-one. Where the two became Christians, they were businesswomen who had been brought there by Christian businesswomen, friends of mine. And we set it up. They're women I work with. Some of them I'm discipling. A lunchtime. This can be done. There's no homework.
Yeah.
They don't prepare. Only, only you prepare. And they don't know that you've prepared. So that they come in, everything, we discover this piloting it, that you see them discover things in the Bible, and the excitement is while they're discovering it. And if they make a mistake in what they've seen, you can correct it quickly before it gets entrenched. But, okay, I'll back up a little bit. Yeah, good. There's always another way. Okay, now, what I would say to you, if we had just all, you're munching on your lunch, see. Now, this is, if you do it on a lunch hour, you don't have to do it on a lunch hour. It can be in a dorm room, it can be over coffee in your home. I would say to you, okay, each one of you would hand out a Bible study, and then, now, these Bibles, I know they're not familiar with the Bible, so we got all the same Bible, NIVs, and you can get them cheap from the Bible Society. And so everybody had the same one. So when I said, turn to page such and such, it just, by the end of it, they were fumbling with it, taking it home. One of them, you know, Jairus' daughter, she wanted to know what happened to the daughter. So while we're doing something else, she read on. She said, I had to find out what happened to the girl. So their curiosity is wonderful. So before, I'm not trying to sell you on something. I just want you to realize God has given us something that is working. And it appeals to women. Okay, let's turn to chapter 3. Now, if this were chapter 1, I would say to you, in order to get acquainted with each other, and we go around and give our names, I might ask you a question. Of all the women in history, who is one that you admire the most or that you would like to model your life after? So, you know, don't think. Because we don't need to answer it. And that question, incidentally, is in the manual. See, there's a lot of, all of these helps, and I'm just going to point them out to you so you don't have to do all the work right now. But by that time, we've discussed, and why did you feel that way, and so forth. And hand out the pens and the chapter. And now I'm going to read the story to you on 3. Okay, we ready? You can follow me, all of you, now that as you eat your lunch. And you don't pray. You don't pray, really. You don't pray. Because it'd be very awkward to non-Christians to start out that way. At the height of Christ's ministry, the people followed him everywhere he went. His popularity, however, was an increasing threat to the Jewish readers. They searched for a way to discredit him. The woman who is the subject of this study presented the golden opportunity to do so, or so they thought. On this particular occasion, Jesus appeared in the temple courts at dawn. There was still a chill in the air, and the sky was streaked with red. People gathered around him, and soon he sat down and began to teach. Suddenly, angry voices interrupted his lesson. The scribes and the Pharisees, the Jewish religious leaders, elbowed their way to the front like a vigilante squad, dragging a disheveled woman with them. Shoving her right in front of Jesus, they shouted out her sin for all to hear. Teacher, they said, this woman was caught in the act of adultery. In the law, Moses commanded us to stone such a woman. Now, what do you say? Here, then, was the trap they had waited for. And this woman was merely the bait. If Jesus said to let her go, then he would be guilty of rejecting the Old Testament law. If he told the scribes and Pharisees to stone her, then the crowd would claim he no longer was a sympathetic friend of common people. He would also be challenging Roman law, which did not allow the Jews to carry out the death sentence. As this woman stood in front of Jesus with a hostile crowd behind her, she must have been terrified. Death by stoning was painful and prolonged, and that ordeal might well be hers within the hour. She watched Jesus bend down from where he sat and began tracing something on the ground in front of her. The accusing voices grew louder and more insistent. At last, Jesus straightened up, looked directly at the men, and spoke. To find out what Jesus said and how the story ends, read and consider this scene in John 8. So let's turn to John 8, 2-11. And that's on page 1421. And if you ever see, and you women all know, see, the neat thing about you women is you know how to do this. You know to put the non-Christian at ease. But the little woman in church is more ill at ease than the non-Christian usually. Okay, so we start with verse 2 of chapter 8. At dawn, he appeared again. So this is a story in the Bible, for the sake of you women, where all the people gathered around him and he sat down to teach them. The teachers of the law and the Pharisees brought in a woman caught in adultery. Now notice, they made her stand before the group and said to Jesus, "Teacher, this woman was caught in the act of adultery. In the law, Moses commanded us to stone such women. Now what do you say?" They were using this question as a trap in order to have a basis for accusing him. But Jesus bent down and started to write on the ground with his finger. When they kept on questioning him, he straightened up and said to them, "If any one of you is without sin, let him be the first to cast a stone at her." Again he stooped down and wrote on the ground. At this point, those who heard began to go away one at a time, the older ones first. In another translation, it says the older ones went away conscience-stricken, until only Jesus was left with the woman still standing there. Jesus straightened up and asked her, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?" "No one, sir," she said. "Then neither do I condemn you," Jesus declared. "Go now and leave your life of sin." Now, Paula has suggested this, and I think it's in the book, that now you have them, you women read it over again silently, so you assimilate the story. After I've read it aloud. Because we are very familiar with the scripture. To them, it's like Shakespeare. Okay, let's assume you've done that. Now, you non-Christians. Now, think in terms of being a non-Christian. The type of question you would ask. How did the scribes and Pharisees treat this woman? And you're going to need to... It's right in the book, Marge.
What?
The answer.
Well,
see, you're non-Christian, and you're looking at me. I think you'll find it in the book. It's easier.
Yeah. Okay.
Anybody? How were they treating this
woman? Well, they were treating her poorly. I mean, they were accusing her. They were...
They were glad to have caught
her doing
something she
shouldn't have done. Yeah. How did you feel? Yeah. They thought they were better.
Right, and you'll remember from one of the other things that we had read that women did not have a very high position at that time in the society, and especially an immoral woman. It's so common in our culture today we don't recognize these things as being immoral, but the Bible still states that. And I would say that. I don't apologize. What guilty party was strangely missing from this scene?
Her partner.
Right. And if they had caught her in the act of adultery, he must have been there, right? Why do you think they didn't bring him?
Maybe he was one of them. Maybe is that another Christian answer?
Yeah. Maybe they're protecting a relative. Who knows?
Maybe he was fast, but he got away.
See, this is great. I wanted to say, now, in the reader's guide, we put in Leviticus, the Leviticus account, and you can go back and read it to them. And it tells you in Leviticus that the man and the woman should have been stoned. So it's, and then the women feel better that the Bible doesn't say that the woman alone should be stoned. So it's very important. Okay, what emotions did this woman probably experience during this dramatic encounter?
Fear.
Of what?
Being stoned. Or...
Good.
Death.
Could have been death.
Terrified.
What other?
Terror. Very angry.
True. Can you think of some other way you might feel?
She might feel ashamed.
Wouldn't she be humiliated? I mean, if she had been caught in the act of adultery, she might be very disheveled or half-dressed. Or, and it may have been all men, and there she is being dragged in by these men. Good. Why did the scribes and Pharisees leave when Jesus said, if any of one of you is without sin, let him be the first to stone, to throw a stone at her? Why do you think they left?
He must have written something on the ground.
People have speculated for years as to what that might be. Do you have any thoughts on it, Carolyn? No thoughts on it. Great. Okay.
Not on what he wrote.
Not on what he wrote. What do you think?
Yeah, just leaving. I'm sure that as soon as he said that, their sin immediately begins to come back to mind, and it's probably starting with the most recent. Or the worst.
You know, I've often wondered if he didn't start to write some things that they began to recognize. But anyway, we don't know, and so we don't need to speculate. But it's interesting. It's an interesting thought. Why do you think she stayed even after her accusers had gone? Remember it said they made her stand in front of Jesus? Why didn't she just slip off into the crowd when it left?
They would have gone ahead and stoned her anyhow.
That's a possibility. That's a good thought.
Maybe she felt safer with Jesus than with those men. Maybe she saw the compassion of Jesus.
See what that does? That's exactly what they see. They see some, you know, I've thought about that. What did she, and you can add to your question, what was she, what was about his presence that didn't make her slink off and run away? Wouldn't you feel really ashamed in front of a holy person? I mean, it'd be like being in front of a priest or a rabbi or a minister. What do you think? Who is the one that had the right to accuse her according to this passage? You notice what it says in... Jesus said to her, or to them, he that is without sin, let him throw the first stone at her. Who qualified to throw the first stone, according to that?
Well, somebody who hadn't sinned.
And was there anyone there?
Mm-mm. They all left. Except Jesus. No.
So Jesus is the one that qualified, wasn't he? Did he? And in the same chapter, if you want to look it over at verse 46... These same Pharisees were accusing Jesus again. And Jesus says, can any of you prove me guilty of sin? If I am telling the truth, why don't you believe me? He who belongs to God hears what God says. The reason you do not hear is that you do not belong to God. So Jesus identifies himself as being sinless, and no one could accuse him. Remember at his trial here at Christmas, he had false accusers because they couldn't find anything true to accuse him of. How would you describe the way that Jesus treated this woman?
Mm-hmm.
What else?
Lovingly. Understanding.
But also, I think...
direct.
Yeah. I mean, he told her, don't do that anymore. Mm-hmm.
What do you,
sidestep the sin.
What do you think sin is? That seems like a good word. It's defined in the other... What is sin? What are we talking about?
Something you do wrong.
But who determines right from wrong?
I'm
You're a non-Christian, huh?
We're non-Christian.
Don't you notice, though, that even if you don't know God or if you don't have a concept, there are consequences for some of the things that we do? Yeah, but yeah, sometimes your conscience can bother you. Some people don't mind doing things at all. You can really condition a conscience. So you don't have to close every... You don't have to have the final word. What motivated Jesus to forgive her? Why did he offer to do that?
I wonder if Jesus... I'm not thinking of John 3:16 there, but he knew in her heart, and he understood where she was coming from, and maybe he saw true repentance.
Maybe he saw her. First of all, she's standing there when she didn't have to.
Yeah.
And even though it doesn't record it, there must have been something happening that he would be forgiving her, reaching out to her. That's good. And then you can, of course, read John 3:16 and 17, that God sent not his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. That's what motivated Jesus to forgive her.
Mm-hmm.
But then you personalize it the way you just did.
Mm-hmm.
But I think question 9 is a real eye-opener. Since all those in the crowd were confronted with their sin, why was this woman the only one Jesus forgave?
She acknowledged it. Of course, she couldn't help it because they...
What about those men?
Those men didn't want forgiveness.
Do you think they believed that Jesus was the Son of God?
Probably not. They were trying to trick him.
They were just really using her to get him.
Good. What were Christ's final words to her? Yeah, he didn't say try to cut it down or you're living some other way, right? You notice how he differentiates between the problem the woman has and her as a person. She is a value. And he's giving her very sound advice, isn't he? You don't want to be humiliated and embarrassed again. Quit it. Okay, now you'll notice on the next page, and I'll continue to read it. Or I might say, Nancy, would you read the last portion of this for us, please?
Starting at, yeah.
No.
Considering
Christ.
Oh, the whole...
Yeah, no, read... I'm sorry. Read the whole
thing. As this scene closes, the spotlight lingers on the two key figures, Jesus and the woman who was caught in adultery. Her sin, committed in private, was made public by men not a whit more righteous than she. Yet here she stood, forgiven, protected, and secure in the presence of the only one who could have justly condemned her. Ironically, she was able to take refuge in Christ only because her dark, hidden secrets had been exposed and forgiven. We all long for a similar sense of safety and security, but to experience that kind of spiritual refuge, we too must be willing to look honestly at ourselves and to turn from our sin. When the Bible uses the word sin, it is speaking of the basic tendency we have to go our own way, to do our own thing. If the secrets of our hearts were laid open and bare before a holy God, what would he see? What would we see? In the book of Romans, there is a short passage that summarizes the predicament we find ourselves in apart from God's intervention. Read Romans 3:10-12, and try putting these verses in your own words. There is, thankfully, a more hopeful note following only a few chapters later in Romans 5. In Romans 5:8, what is that message of hope? God, the heavenly parent, is love, and therefore he wants children upon whom he can lavish his love and receive their love in return. Stanley Jones. Jesus loves us and has freed us from our sins by his blood. Revelation 1:5.
Okay. We'll see you next week, girls.
Oh,
been fun.
I mean,
yes.
When she was reading... Read Romans 3:10-12.
Return to
us.
Stop and do it. I'm stopping now because we have one more chapter that I want us to break up and do together now.
Mm-hmm. And we should never ask questions about what the Bible verses mean. Like, they
oh, sure. Oh, and they come. Some of their comments I have put in the book because they had insights that I didn't have into the scripture passage. like the woman who was healed by Jesus, one of the women said, maybe, the question is in here, why did she hesitate to acknowledge that she was the one that was healed? And she said, maybe she thought she had stolen something from Jesus without his permission. That was a great thought. And so that's in the reader's guide. There are about four or five different answers to the question. So you'll have additional information. They'll say, in the reader's guide, it'll say on question six, here's some additional background. So the reader has more content that she can bring into it.
Let me be clear on this.
Yes.
What we're doing now are perforated
pages. Yeah.
Okay.
You have the whole Bible study, the five chapters. Right. The thing you don't have is the overview and the reader's guide.
Okay.
Nobody even brought it up.
Okay.
And if it is, say to them, well, the fact is that it is recorded in the scriptures because it is obviously something that Jesus would do. It is not in conflict with anything else, and the later church authorities felt that the story should be in there. So it's still in. See, remember, what they respect, whether we like to think so or not, they really do respect the bound Bible. And it's the theologians today that are making such a hassle over it. Not one woman in any of these groups even noticed that. Now, there may be need to put some sort of explanation, but...
Yeah, do you take the Bibles and then collect them?
Yes.
And
home, yeah. Home? When they became Christians, we offered them a Bible, and most of them had one at home, but sometimes they'll take them. Yeah. But then after those two became Christians, they said, can't we keep meeting? Because they had gotten to know each other. So the other two women that I'm discipling took over the group, and I haven't been back. There's no need. So you can start these things up, and you don't have to keep all the balls in the air.
So how many weeks?
Five. See, a chapter a week. What we did in these few minutes, rather condensed, is what you can do in 40 minutes or 50 minutes.
And those two non-Christians, were they two so far? Or have you done this once or maybe?
Oh, I've done this. I've done it. I can't think of it. But some of the other women have done them too. One Chinese woman was she's in my Married Women's Bible Study. And I had been teaching follow-up, and she had three women that finally came to her from her Chinese church and said, would you follow us up? As they got together, they began to have a burden for their non-Christian friends, so they invited eight non-Christian Chinese women to a once-a-month study, and they used this once a month. At the end of the fifth week, they had four Chinese women left. And my little friend Teresa said, I was afraid to ask them the direct question that you'll see in here at the fifth chapter. And she said, so I said, if any of you are interested in receiving Christ, write it down on a piece of paper. And one of them did. And so she went over to her house and led her to Christ. Mm-hmm. Another woman led her hairdresser to Christ with it. Karen Berquist led a student. They did the first chapter, and the student received Christ. And the other two non-Christian students that were with her said, are there any more stories like this in the Bible? Mm-hmm. So...
How non-Christian were they?
Like
secular?
Yeah, well, you know what I say, everybody needs to know Christ. The two women that came to Christ when I led had Catholic backgrounds.
Probably.
The Chinese probably could have Buddhist backgrounds.
Right. The younger Christians now are the more secularized. The older ones still have some input.
But they still like hearing these stories, because we're dealing with stories and emotions. Do you notice that?
Mm-hmm.
Women can identify with it.
Now, you said you like to have non-Christians in the group. I mean, Christians.
Yes.
So that,
they're the friends.
Yeah.
But not more Christians than non-Christians,
no.
If you can.
But I was wondering, like, because I'd like to, you know, do something like this in my neighborhood. Uh-huh. I'm getting to know somebody. And I don't know that they are Christian. I mean, I don't know who is and who isn't.
Then bring along some other one that you know is a Christian and who's in agreement with you, because if the non-Christians all gang up on you, you need somebody else thinking.
Yeah.
And that was always helpful to me. Sometimes I didn't quite get the question the person was answering. The other one perceived it. Mm-hmm. And so you always want one assistant. But if you have five or six, nine Krishnas, let the thing, you know, grow, because you're going to continually bring them back to the Bible. If they get too far afield, or if they say something that really doesn't mesh with what it says, you can always say graciously, well, you know, we can speculate as to what it might have meant, but what it clearly does say is this. And then you kind of move on. The difference, I think the thing I perceive now as you're talking, is they recognize you as the authority, the person who knows something more than they know. And they're not going to jump in. Unless they're antagonistic. If you're an antagonistic person, then you have to deal with that. But be quiet and reflect back, and pretty soon the other non-Christians will rally around the gracious one. You know, if somebody's antagonistic, you don't have to be a Christian to recognize that. All I can say is it has been so far a very pleasant experience. Now, the first time I piloted it, I invited my realtor, the woman who had helped me find my condo, and I asked the Lord. When I first met her, I said, Lord, seal to me that I have been in your will to buy this condo by her salvation. That's quite a risk. And I took her through this. She loved it. Then we used another NAV press Bible study, and it just disbanded the four of us. Anyway, 4 years later, she came to the women's conference here, and I put in her room with her a woman that I had led to Christ 25 years ago in Denver. And I said, Marcia, find out if she's a Christian. Find out if she's a Christian. So Marcia comes to me a couple of days later. She is not a Christian, but she intends to become one before she leaves Glen Eyrie. The foundation was laid 4 years before. The relationship continued. And she's a Christian. I know. So what I'm saying is she's still a product of...
Did you keep up a relationship with
Yes.
Uh-huh.
I was just thinking, wouldn't this Bible study, which is very laid out, and wouldn't it be a good tool to have, like, say, you have some Christian friends that are young Christians? And
oh, yeah. You're right, Marge. It is for the Christian also. But the point is, if we made it for the Christian, it would be like all the other Navigator Bible studies. Yeah. Christians would do it, five chapters, and they'd be done with that one. Okay, now what's the next book? And no one would come to Christ. I think the thing that God has laid on my heart is evangelism.
Well, and I was thinking about that one person that you have, and one Christian that you have to help you.
Oh, sure.
If you had like a younger Christian, you're kind of teaching her through this. But nothing inspires a Christian more than seeing people asking these honest questions and responding. So it'd be a real tool in training.
Absolutely. See, the women that were sitting in there got to watch me lead two women to Christ.
Yeah.
You talk about being fired up.
Yeah.
I had another one with me in Europe. I didn't use the study, of course, but I led one woman to Christ standing up. We had gone to this church service. There were four beautiful models sitting in this row, two rows ahead of us. And when they introduced us as coming from Seattle, one of them said, I'm from Seattle. She swung around this attractive girl. She turns out to be the sister of a co-worker of the woman that I brought with me, Leslie. Mm-hmm. And Leslie recognized her name and said, are you so-and-so's sister? Well, here a Christian, one Christian model had brought these other three young women to this church service. Craziest thing. In Munich. So I started to talk to this girl. I said, when you want to become a Christian, it's like receiving a gift. So I used the illustration that we use in here. And I talked to her about receiving a gift. And I said, do you understand? She said, mm-hmm. And so then she walks away, and Leslie gives her testimony. And then it dawns on me, maybe she's ready. So I walk over to Leslie and Carrie, and I said, Carrie, would you like to receive Jesus Christ right now? And she said, yes, I would. Mm-hmm. Radiant Christian, called her family. So by the time we got back, she had already witnessed to the sister that Leslie had been working with for a year. Mm-hmm. And Leslie said, now are you interested? in discovering more about Jesus Christ? And the sister said, yes, I am. So it's working. That's all I can say. I feel God is doing something, and I want so much for us to be a part of it together. Okay, we have 25 minutes.
The power of the word and the power of the right questions and allowing people to discover.
To discover, and the privacy of not being in a restaurant and being interrupted by it. That's, you know, we do a lot of things in restaurants. I don't think this is going to be helpful. Dolores, would you like to lead the second one for that table? And who would like to, the last, I thought we'd skip, I hated to skip four because I really love it, but do five because it winds up it summarizes the gospel. Okay? So if you would read that one, Dolores, and who would like to read this one? Okay, Nancy, you do it. Are you willing to? Yes. You do a great job.
Well, gals, we're on our fifth week of Bible study now, this study. And let's just read the opening passage here. Laura, would you read it for us, and then we'll just all follow along on our own?
As Christ continued his public ministry, more and more people began to travel with him from one town to the next. Some were no doubt just curious onlookers, but others followed because they could not help but accompany the person who had so radically changed their lives. Mary Magdalene was among the latter group. She had long ago moved from the ranks of the curious to the convinced. Little is known of her life before she met Christ, except for this descriptive phrase that occasionally follows her name, Mary Magdalene, out of whom Jesus had driven seven demons, in Mark 16:9. Christ healed her of whatever debilitating physical, emotional, or spiritual problem engulfed her. She may have been an obscene screamer or one who laughed uncontrollably. Mary was, no doubt, an embarrassment to her family, avoided in the neighborhood, and restricted from the temple worship. But whatever the exact malady of her past, Christ had given her a new life. She was so grateful that she had joined the group of women who traveled with Christ and contributed to his support out of their private means. In fact, the Gospels lead us to conclude by the prominent mention of her name that Mary Magdalene was a leader among those women. No heroic acts were ascribed to Mary Magdalene, but she was present and available to serve Jesus in any way she could. During the last events of Christ's life and death, she was an ever-present figure. She was most likely in the crowd of disciples and friends who accompanied Christ on his triumphal entry into Jerusalem.
The group of Jesus' closest followers had all traveled together to 60 or 70 miles on foot from Galilee. And yet, unlike many of Jesus' disciples, Mary remained faithful even when the tide turned against Jesus. She had been with him when the crowds cheered. She would also be there in his suffering and death. In all probability, Mary watched Jesus drag the heavy cross to Golgotha. She witnessed the soldiers nail his hands and feet to the cross and listened to people hurl insults at him. She felt the earth tremble as darkness filled the sky at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and later heard Jesus cry out, my God, why have you forsaken me? She stayed near the cross until he died, and then she followed his body to the tomb. As soon as the Sabbath was over, Mary visited Jesus' grave again. It was almost sunrise, and she brought spices to anoint his body. When she reached the tomb, she was surprised to see that it was open. Mary was privileged to be the first witness of an extraordinary event. Okay, let's now turn in our Bibles to John chapter 20, 10 through 18. I'll read this. So the disciples went away again to their own homes, but Mary was standing outside the tomb weeping. And so as she wept, she stooped and looked into the tomb. And she beheld two angels in white sitting, one at the head and one at the feet where the body of Jesus had been lying. And they said to her, Woman, why are you weeping? She said to them, Because they have taken away my Lord, and I do not know where they have laid him. When she had said this, she turned around and beheld Jesus standing there and did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to her, Woman, why are you weeping? Whom are you seeking? Supposing him to be the gardener, she said to him, Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have laid him, and I will take him away. Jesus said to her, Mary. And she turned and said to him, in Hebrew, Rabboni, which means teacher.
Jesus said to her, "Stop clinging to me, for I have not yet ascended to the Father, but go to my brethren and say to them, I ascend to my Father and your Father, and my God and your God." Mary Magdalene came announcing to the disciples, "I have seen the Lord," and that he had said these things to her. Okay, let's just look at our questions then that we've got in this chapter, or in this section of this chapter. What range of emotions, when you try to imagine being Mary, what range of emotions must Mary have felt as she endured through that last week of Christ's life? I've just read about her being with him and becoming one of his groupies.
Well, probably apprehension of what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering, you know, what do you think about the stages of grief? You know, maybe she was just couldn't believe this was happening.
Mm-hmm. Just that it would really come to this.
Refusing to really. Wanting to believe that that's
really
happened. She may have wanted to blame the people who were involved in doing it.
Mm-hmm. It must have been just excruciating to know and feel what she felt and yet and see all these things happening around her.
And to be totally helpless, to be able to do it.
What do you think, Helen?
Yeah, I just think if she had been. She would come down to Jesus and go through that tremendous Palm Sunday thing where he was honored by everybody. And then she watches the thing during the week. You know, maybe she was very excited to be with him and be part of the disciples and all that was going on. And then suddenly the tension begins to rise. And, and then she hears that he's been captured by the priest, you know. The horror that going on, and then to see him on the cross and be helpless to do anything. But I mean, her Lord, the one that had done so much for her. This is how I would
answer.
But I think she must have gone, it occurred to me that all in one week period, she had come down with Jesus from Galilee, and all in that one week period, she experienced all of that.
This is making me want to ask other questions that aren't on the paper.
You can
do it. I mean, it just makes me think, I wonder if she ever doubted whether, you know, here this, she'd become a part of Jesus' folly and it seemed like the Palm Sunday, and then seeing this, and I wonder if she had moments of doubting whether, you know, she had...
Jesus tell him he was going to die all along. But somehow, Mary of Bethany believed it. But I don't know that Mary Magdalene caught it. Because she's weeping. Where is he?
Caught the fact that he really was going to die.
And be resurrected.
Well, his disciples didn't even grasp it.
But they, Mary, that's why I hated to miss Mary Bethany, because there's some great insights. But Mary, you know, when you think of the family, and I brought this out to our group, it's usually the family who takes care of the bodies. What does she say to it? Tell me where you put him.
And I'll go and take care of him, take him away. Right.
And devoted. So close to Jesus, she would take care of
him. Well, see, you know, if she did have any doubts, certainly somehow God just instilled in her the conviction and belief that she should hang in there. Okay, what's our next question?
I think the question would go through my mind if the cross is why.
This is not a triumphant ending, not a happy ending. What was Mary Magdalene's initial response to the empty tomb? Just review it, John 21 and 2. And then verse 11.
So she thought they had taken him away. So she probably thought...
Think about that. That's a good question. I wonder how old she was. Let's see. Initial response. And in verse 11, what does that say to Mary?
She was crying.
She wept. Why do you think she was weeping? It seems like that'd be pretty normal that there might have been some of that going on. Like you say, Jesus wasn't that old. He was probably not hard to look at. So, and of course, just all his charisma and gentleness, and you know, just the things that we've seen. How he
responded, just what you're saying.
Okay.
Just some.
Yeah.
A deity. We're introducing to a deity.
Mm-hmm.
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 He must have experienced that care.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Right.
I'm so grateful for it. Must have been so grateful for what he had done for me. And compared with the rest of the men in those days, he probably stood out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who, if they've even asked, but sometimes they ask, why didn't Jesus have any female disciples? These women traveled with him.
Mm-hmm. And supported him. And
but they listened to his teachings.
Yeah.
That's
mm-hmm.
why they knew so much. And they were so close to him.
Uh-huh. Is that ever a question, Helene, in your Bible studies, the fact that they did help support him, that Jesus possibly was using the women in that sense? Is that ever something that...
Because I don't think I bring it up. I don't read the Jesus that. I just tell him that he traveled with them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I couldn't remember. Did that, was that in the preliminary here?
He hasn't used them in the
Mm-hmm.
And well, you know, the young ones in those days weren't quite accepted. And Joanna leaves her husband, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He's in Herod's court, but she meets him and goes off with Jesus. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of questions you can ask.
I was going to say, do you find leading this study that you almost have to control yourself? Not to go off and ask questions that you might ask in a group of more mature Christians.
Just have to keep in mind who's there. But you know what's hard to do is to keep the Christians from answering the questions.
Mm-hmm.
I really have to talk to the Christians.
She was so into it.
Yeah.
Every time I'd ask questions, she'd answer it. Stop answering the questions.
I'll do this with you later. Just
right.
So do you get ahead of it? And then you get together with some ahead of time and kind of...
No, she was bringing a couple of non-Christians, but...
You had to remind her she was a plant.
I'd ask a question and she's answering it, and I'd ask it, otherwise she's answering it. Called her up.
Yeah.
Please, call her back.
Well, I could just see how you'd really have to be careful to stay on the questions here.
Well, you don't want to be that rigid. Take off.
But you could really go way off,
You just have to be careful you don't ask a question that's going to bring up a lot of
controversial things.
You want to give them some freedom, latitude.
Yeah.
But you say, well, okay, now let's get back to the next question.
Yeah.
As I said, you don't have to close them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do all the theological things that they bring up. But
you don't have to arrive at a final, this is what the answer is.
Can,
yeah.
And you can allow them to go away with a different thought.
Yeah.
But you're still drawing them through the gospel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's get back to the question now, girls. Back to question three. Why do you think she didn't recognize Jesus?
He must have been changed somehow.
Yeah.
She knew him so well before. If he were the same, you think she would recognize him.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And NIV says she turned toward him.
Or maybe it wasn't fully daylight yet.
That's one possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Her eyes were clouded with tears.
Crowded.
Mm-hmm. She'd been crying.
Remember I told you when I started laughing, I couldn't see.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're really weeping.
Sure.
And you're not expecting
it's incredulous that it would happen.
She saw him dead.
Yeah.
Why would she be looking for him to be alive?
Yeah.
Also, her last vision of him on the cross,
mm-hmm.
you know, when he was being crucified, and here, you know, he is.
Whole
and
so
probably
she follows,
looking good.
She follows him from the cross to the tomb.
Uh-huh.
In this account, very important. She was a witness to where he was buried.
You know, that's you know, if she had thought it would be Jesus, she would expect to have seen his crucified body and bloody and so on.
Now another thing that you don't bring out is Nicodemus. 100 pounds or 75 pounds of spices. He and Joseph already had that on Jesus. She's coming in wanting more spices.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's devotion.
Really? 75 pounds, that's a lot of spices. Okay.
It's fun to see this. You get more and more information. Yeah. Just like to shut up so that you
know. Really?
I think she's fine. I don't think her head was fully turned around. Another thing that's in the reader's guide, maybe Jesus hid his identity from her.
Mm-hmm. Like the two men on the road. Okay, in verse 17, reading that, what did Jesus tell her to do?
So, well, hold on.
Stop cleaning.
Go instead. That's the answer. Mm-hmm. Go instead. Mm-hmm. My brothers and children.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you want to emphasize not the stop playing, but the... Okay,
he said... Jesus is trying to explain that their relationship is going to be different. He's not going to be present anymore. Don't be not anymore.
So in an emotional sense, he's talking there, not... I mean, it was probably a physical thing, but he's speaking emotionally.
Says that a woman's testimony isn't worth anything in the courts at that time, and Jesus is saying... You go and tell.
Okay. Now, is that something that would be in the leader's guide?
I can't remember it.
Okay. But there are some fill-ins then for the leader.
There is.
Okay.
My thought, if when you said that one of the reasons that he might have hidden himself from her, if I think about as a non-Christian, I might think, well, you mean he wanted to reveal himself to the men first?
Mm-hmm.
No, he went. No, because he didn't. He chose. I heard my pastor say that the reason Jesus revealed himself in Mary Magdalene is because she was there. And I wrote him a note and I said, the disciples had also been there and he did not reveal himself to them.
Okay.
Jesus could have revealed himself anywhere.
Well, and if he had not wanted to reveal himself to her, he certainly could have prevented that.
The most important... I'm answering the question.
Yes, who's leading this study?
You'd have to talk to that.
My plant that's saying too much, I think. Okay, so she said to him... it's time. Okay, let's go on to question 5. Why do you think Mary was the one he appeared to first after he was raised from the dead? This is, I think we were touching on this.
And then 6 is, we need to move on.
Okay, and then also girls, be thinking of why is the resurrection of Christ essential to our faith? Why do you think the fact that he resurrected?
Because if he had died and not resurrected, his death would have been just like anybody else's. He would have been no different than anybody else.
I have a question on this question, Helene. You move right here into essential for to our faith, assuming that we're all sharing the same faith.
To our faith. That's true. You could read it that way. You could say to the faith of the Christians.
Okay.
You don't want to tell them that I'm Christian or not Christian.
No.
Why is it essential?
Mm-hmm.
It's a good point, but it's too late.
Okay.
They tell me this is your last.
This is it.
Time you make correction.
Okay. Okay, why is the resurrection of Christ essential to the faith of a Christian?
It set Jesus aside as an ordinary, from the ordinary teachers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, we would be serving a dead God.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just
just wouldn't be any different.
You point out history. That's the empty one.
Yeah.
See, there's there would be no difference between the man and the
woman. We have 4 more minutes, girl.
Let's see. So you want to, should we read this considering Christ section here? Okay, I'll read this next section. Considering Christ, Christ revealed himself to many people after his resurrection. The end of each gospel contains a more detailed account of those incidents. A clear summary of those appearances is found in 1 Corinthians 15, 3 through 8.
That's a great passage.
And so you would stop and...
Yeah, read it.
The Apostle Paul uses this as powerful evidence of the authenticity of Christ and his message. In fact, Paul rather boldly declares the resurrection of Jesus Christ to be the pivotal point of Christianity. Read 1 Corinthians 15:12-19. Why does Paul say that Jesus' resurrection is so important? And of course, you would have to make sure you went into that. Never before has the world clamored so loudly for answers, and never before has it been so committed to the idea that no answers are available. Ayn Rand, and I need a refresher on exactly who she is. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except by me, is what Jesus Christ said. Wrapping up your study. As these five scenes demonstrate, and the rest of the New Testament bears witness, Jesus treated women as individuals of unique worth and value. Because of his example and mode, wherever Christianity has influenced a culture throughout the centuries, the status of women has dramatically changed for the better. No conqueror or religious leader before or since has done for women what Jesus has done. Yet each of the women in these stories experienced more than the personable, warm response of a compassionate man. Jesus quite literally transformed the lives of the women in these New Testament accounts. Jesus Christ longs to meet the need of women in our generation as well. He is the same yesterday, today, and forever. You can encounter Christ just as these women did by responding to what he has done for you. Accepting the reality of what Christ has done for you by his death on the cross is very similar to accepting a gift that another person has purchased for you. That gift is a mark of that person's graciousness towards you, the expression of his or her love. When you and I accept the gift of God's love in Christ, we are saying that we believe that our sin has created such an insurmountable barrier between us and God that only the death of his Son, Jesus Christ, could bring us back into a right relationship with him. The following two verses express in a succinct, clear way that what that belief really means. How would you put these verses in your own words? John 5:24. Should we turn to John? Why don't you look at John 5:24? Let's wind it up. If you would like to begin a new life with Christ, you can express that desire to God very simply in prayer. You can do that by praying and acknowledging to God that you realize you've sinned and you need forgiveness. You can ask Christ to come into your life right now and give you a new life in him. Carolyn, have you ever taken this step with Jesus Christ? Or do you have any questions what it would mean to receive Christ?
I did a long time ago.
Okay.
If I knew I haven't, what do I do?
Well, Mark, would you like to pray?
Sure.
Would you like to receive this gift of God's love? Well, then why don't we just all pray together and...
Would she pray now and I would repeat what she says?
See, when I said that to these women, there were six or eight of us in the room, and I said, Dear Jesus, and there was silence. And I looked at them and I said, okay, let's all of us repeat out loud. So the Christians and the non-Christians all together repeat.
See, I kind of like that in that setting.
If you're going to do it in a group.
Or you might respond by saying, I'd rather do it privately. Okay, now do you understand what you need to do? If you have any questions, or maybe you and I can just talk over here. See, you'll get to know the women.
It's lunchtime. Time flies when you're having fun. Right. That's why you're going to have to buy the book. Ayn Rand is a philosopher. I think she's a Jewish, very well known in collegiate circles. It's spelled the way it's correct. A-Y-N. Ayn Rand. Okay, I'd like to ask all of you a question now if I can get you to look up for a minute. Is there a better way to handle this? And did you enjoy doing it hands-on?
Well,
Well, it's very difficult. I was having a hard time understanding what I was reading because there was such an echo
over here. So
I was trying to
tune her out.
And never having even read the material, it's sort of blind. I mean,
how could we do? See, I did want you to experience something, though.
And see, you were adding a lot of things that have been helpful.
You could have done it to a larger group.
To a larger group? Okay, so the second time, we'll do both chapters
together.
I think together.
I think you should take it.
All right, and that's the kind of help I wanted.
Because Dolores is great.
Okay, what's your evaluation of the study as it is, as little as you've browsed through it?
Well, I think it's excellent.
I like the question.
I think for me, I need to go through and meditate on those and think through and everything and hear it was like.
And that's right, pray.
And you would have the leader's guide, too.
Yes. See, that's. I forget all the things, too. I can't remember all the stuff we put in it.
Do you have any places? Go ahead.
I was going to say, if you want to start a study like this, how do you go about recruiting people to do this?
Well, what you say to them is, have you ever, and we have those questions in the manual, have you ever been curious about what Jesus Christ thought of women? Some of us are getting together. On a lunch hour, if it's a lunch hour, or tomorrow evening, or for breakfast, or whenever. And we have a guide that will help us to understand what Jesus thinks of women, but we're going to study it from the Bible. And you can browse through this thing if you want to. It's hard to do that when you just have one copy.
Oh, yeah.
But, and that's all changed.
This is the book.
Yeah, this is the whole thing. But if you want to look at the Leader's Guide, that's a study.
This is. I really like the idea of taking these women as examples and their own stories because all of them, I think outside the world, there are quite some stories out there.
Identify with Shabbat
and they are looking for us to be identified. I think what you said is so true that women's lives are almost they never do that.
How could they?
They couldn't, and of course, what they did not have was really behind,
Well, see, women have changed our whole culture in the last, I would say, 10 to 15 years, and now we're reaping the results of that. Broken homes, and it's not as popular as it was then. See, I don't think we could have done this as effectively back then.
And that was on women traveling with Jesus.
I know.
My thought was that now we wouldn't think anything about in the culture, but even 10 years ago.
I know. I said the same thing to them. I don't think I mentioned that she came down with him, but they all came in a large group, and often his mother was with them.
Now, are these cultural things in here, or those things that would be helpful for us?
Well, let's look it up. I can't read. What do you mean? I don't understand your question. Like that?
Considering her
right. Well, many gurus or rabbis or philosophers had disciples that followed them in those days. So you can kind of bring that out. I don't try to. You can't answer every.
So many of them had an immoral context.
Right.
I think the women would think that immediately.
Okay, yeah. When you just say travel down?
Yeah.
But the fact that his mother was often with him. And she was certainly at the cross, and she traveled down there with him. The two major emphases of chapter 5 are, one, the significance of the resurrection of Christ and a clear presentation. The resurrection of Jesus Christ is a pivotal point of the gospel. If Jesus had not risen from the dead, so you've got all of that. The uniqueness of Christianity rests on the silent witness of the empty tomb. And then explore how Mary might have felt during the triumphal entry, hearing Jesus' capture, trial, and execution. Then examine her consternation upon discovering the tomb was empty and she took her spices. 3, Mary's eyes were no doubt swollen from mourning. Perhaps she did not look up, assuming that the person that stood there was merely a groundskeeper. I mean, why would she expect it to be Jesus? The last she saw me was being carried to the tomb. Remember that a woman's testimony, see, and somewhere we told you that, was not considered valid in the Jewish culture, yet Jesus trusted her to go to his disciples with the news that he was alive. Since Peter and John had seen the empty tomb, but not the angels or the Lord, we must conclude that Jesus chose to reveal himself to Mary first. So you've got a lot of backup information.
Did you read question 1, the range of emotions?
Well, I question that. We just mentioned that here. But explore how Mary might have felt during the triumphal entry. I just read that. Hearing of Jesus' capture. This is question 1, trial and execution. These are all emotions. It seems to me she must have started on a high and then got worse and worse and worse. And the weeping would represent that. And then the execution. Then examine her consternation upon discovering the tomb was empty. Now, he'd been telling them that he was going to rise again, but see, somehow she didn't get it either. So we try to answer some of them.
But they're not going to be answered.
You'll never answer all of them. Well, you've led a lot of Bible study. And the thing you do is you say, if there's a real valid question, I don't know the answer to that. But I'll look it up next time and we'll talk about it. And maybe have your assistant look it up. You're welcome. Thank you. Good group.